The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier, Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Columbia, Mompos, Columbia. Today, finishing up my season here at the hotel, La Casa Amarilla, my little project in Mompos, Columbia. Anyway, so we're finishing up. It's episode number 81. Who would have thought? Episode number 81. All those months ago, as I struggled to find the people to interview and to how to build this, a listenership, how to build an audience. But here we are. We're still here. And episode 81, coming to you live from Mompos, Colombia. And my very special guest this week will be Chris Bell. Chris is an expert in Latin America and the Caribbean. Indeed, he's an expert in Colombia because he's writing for the See Colombia travel blog. That's seecolombia.travel. You can see any of his work at seecolombia.travel/blog. And then just look up Chris, C-H-R-I-S. Anyway, so Chris will be joining me a little bit later, you know, after we do this intro here, and we'll be talking all about Colombia and what brought him here. I do understand that Chris is a birder, and I do understand that he's, he's got a fair few topics of conversation that he wants to share with us. So hopefully this will be another interesting show for you out there. What did you guys think of last week's show with Caroline Doherty de Novoa and indeed Vicky Kellaway, the banana skin flip-flops girl? If you haven't checked out that website, that blog, please check it out. Very erudite, very interesting, very personal writing. And indeed, of course, what would you think about our book that we're putting together that will be launched in March at the book fair here in Bogota? Was Gabo an Irishman? So how cool does that sound? Anyway, the feedback so far has been overwhelmingly positive, so it's now down to us to knuckle down and edit these submissions and go through and have editorial meetings and late nights, probably booze-fueled, to discuss which are the stories and which are the submissions that we think best fit that this edition that is tentatively called Was Gabo an Irishman? So yes, it's 2015. This is the second show of the year. We're looking forward to bigger and better things this year. And of course, the platform is growing with Escape Artist and the Overseas Radio Network. And of course, it's a huge year for me. A huge year not only in all things professional, but my son will be born in April. So expect all of these shows to be littered with references to babies and newborns and schooling and so on. And in fact, I'm thinking of getting Claire Austin, who's an English expat here in Colombia, back on the show in a couple of weeks' time. She came on one of the first shows. I mean, I guess she must have been like episode 10 or 5 or whatever. But she was talking about childbirth in Colombia. And in fact, her stories were about how the doctor who was delivering her little boy, Nico, who's now a couple of years old, only knew a couple of words in English. And so as she's up there, legs in the stirrups, pushing, this doctor is helpfully repeating words like mouse and chocolate. And there she is, in all of her naked vulnerability, let's say. Anyway, so I'm thinking of getting her back on so that we can, compare notes as a future father-to-be and, of course, as an English mother here in Bogota, how she's found it these last couple of years. So that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Anyway, we're always interested to hear from you. Please get in touch. That's ColumbiaCalling@gmail.com, through our website, That's ColumbiaCallingRadio.com, and of course on Twitter at Columbia Calling. So of course, you know, we do get emails. The best of those are read out on the show. Insults won't be read out unless they're incredibly erudite and witty and make me laugh. If they're just plain straight up insults, I will not read them out. Aside from that, we're here sweating in Mompos. Those of you who have not been yet, please check it out. Just Google in Mompos or the Casa Amarilla Mompos and you'll see what we're trying to do here, kind of like a social project. And then from then on in, for the next few months, I reckon I'll be in Bogota because, of course, the hospital care is better here, just in case my wife needs any urgent attention in her in these final 3 months, so April. So please, all of your favourable thoughts towards us and positive vibes for us in that. So yes, I'm lining up some interesting people for the coming weeks. Hopefully fresh faces, fresh voices for the rest of you, and we will keep them coming and make sure we keep you interested and keep you tuned in. So thank you again for listening. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling, and we'll be right back with Chris Bell in the next segment of this show. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here, and we're in Mompos once again. Last week's show was in Mompos with Caroline Doherty de Novoa and Vicky Kellaway talking about the book, the Gabo book, Was Gabo an Irishman, as it's tentatively entitled. Now, this week, I have remained in Mompos, so I'm happy to say that I'm here with my very special guest. His name is Chris Bell, and he too is sweating like me in Mompos. Welcome on the show, Chris.
It's unbelievably hot in the region. Thank you for having me.
And of course, for recording purposes, we've turned off the fan, which is a necessary element to life in Mompos. So, and now, Chris, tell me a second, behind that beard, how hot is it? I mean, it's got a big, it's not even a hipster beard. It's a bushy, like a wild man, Brian Blessed beard.
This is a woodsman's beard. I'm really in the wrong place. I've been in the wrong place for the last 3 weeks, really. This is a Bogota beard.
This is a Bogota beard for the chillier climes of the high altitude. But you've been traveling all over Colombia this Christmas period, New Year's period.
Yeah, I started off in Barranquilla, been all along the coast, Santa Marta, up in the Sierra Nevada, to Santa Marta for Christmas, New Year in the Tayrona. Which is nice. Hunting birds in Los Camarones.
You weren't hunting. You were hunting sea birds.
I would never hunt a bird. You know that as well as I would never hunt a bird. I was hunting to add more birds to my growing Colombian list.
Yeah, because you'd get all sorts of trouble from my listeners for that one. So.
Oh, no. I'd like to clarify that. Definitely not. I'm very much a bird lover. Valledupar. And Mompos, Aracataca as well.
Aracataca. So you've been a little bit of a sort of Garcia Marquez route there. I mean, Aracataca. How is it? I have to ask, how is Aracataca now that our famous Dutchman Tim Buendia has gone?
It was very strange, actually, because I was there when Tim was there in 2012. And he was the life and soul of tourism in Aracataca. And I went back there, and I had no idea his place had closed. I was completely oblivious to that particular development. And I got there and I was asking for Tim's before, all you had to say was, Mr. Tim's place, and you were straight there on a moto or a tuk-tuk or anything. And it's gone, and a lot of people don't seem to remember even where it was, and I found myself in a bit of a identity crisis questioning if I'd even been there at all. It was strange.
So it's been sort of Macondian in that. In fact, that could be your submission. That's interesting, but would you say that it benefited from Tim's, his foray there? He was there for almost 6-7 years, something like that. Or has it just gone back to being like he was never there?
It's strange. I think there's definitely some developments that have stayed. There's people there who were keen espousers of Gabo's legend there and showing you, and they know the tourism trade, and that exists. But it does seem to have taken a step backwards from when he was there. When he was there, it was great. The Gypsy Residence, his hostel, was a real focal point for the town, for tourism, a place where everybody went. And that was fantastic. And it didn't feel quite the same.
No, but there are still places to stay.
Oh, yeah, there's still places to stay.
Confirm this to travellers out there.
There's one hostel that looked perfectly nice but was closed because they'd taken a Christmas holiday, which was perfect. And I stayed in it. I'd completely forgotten the name of the hotel. We're the only people in this very strange sort of 70s style hotel with pictures that your grandma would have on the wall of snowy log cabins in Germany that had nothing to do with anything. But yeah, you can stay there. It was $16,000 for two people for a night.
So, less than $8 for less two people for a night.
Yeah, so pretty, pretty nice room.
So by going to Rakatakia, you're essentially saving money as well. I think it's sad that Tim's moved on, but of course life moves on, and I know he's had a child, and raising a child in Rakatakia was going to be difficult. But so you can confirm that there still are places to stay. It's still interesting to visit. It's still worthwhile. It hasn't fallen off the grid because Tim's not there.
No, not at all. I think he laid the foundations, and it's definitely worth a visit.
Okay, so now you are you are a birder. That's the terminology.
That's the one.
That's the one.
Right, between birdwatcher and twitcher.
You are not a twitcher. You are not a birdwatcher. You are a birder. Now I know that Colombia it's mega diverse and etc. and has the most amount of bird species in it, alongside Ecuador, I believe, or Panama.
Colombia's just edged it.
Just edged it.
1903.
1903 species.
Yeah.
How did you get into birding, to start with? Because, I mean, it's an important industry for Colombia and something that you can really push forward with the tourism industry here.
Yeah, no, it's massive. I mean, I started when I was very young, where with my granddad, who liked... he was one of the old school egg collectors in Lancashire when it was still a boys-only pursuit, not an illegal, 10-year sentence crime. When it was just still sort of larks in a hedgerow, I started getting interested then, and I'm from Shropshire, which is a really beautiful rural county, lots of birds around there. And yeah, I mean, the UK is great, things like that. The number of reserves and protection afforded to birds is fantastic. I mean, it's definitely growing in Colombia. Pro Aves have some really great reserves here. And you're right about the tourism industry. It's got a lot of potential because people are prepared to invest a lot of money in seeing and checking certain things off their list. And Colombia can provide a lot of different species in just 2-3 weeks.
I mean, and in your personal experiences, I mean, you were clearly up there in the Sierra Nevada, which is known for having endemic species up there, and the tallest, this is the only sort of mountain range on the coastline of its nature, isn't it? It's a sort of isolated mountain range up there in Sierra Nevada, and you were up in Minca as well, which is known for it. But are there any places that you would, go out of your way to say to birders, or perhaps twitchers or bird watchers, where they should go in Colombia?
Yeah, I mean, the place I was on Christmas Day, the San Lorenzo Ridge, which is just above El Dorado, which is a Pro Aves bird reserve, there is fantastic. I mean, it's endemic central for the world, I think, in one spot. I mean, I was up there on a fairly casual Christmas Day tour, and we saw something like 13, 14 endemics without really having to break a sweat, which was fantastic. And to be honest, I'd recommend it for even just somebody who's casually interested in nature. Because for me, the thing about endemic species is that's the only place in the world that they exist. Mm-hmm. Whether you're interested in birds or not, I always think that's quite cool, that you can go anywhere else in the world and you won't find that parakeet anywhere apart from this mountain. I'd recommend it, if only because you've got the view of the two tallest mountains in Colombia with the sun glinting off snow-capped peaks and the Caribbean on the other side, which is a pretty unique thing.
Pretty spectacular, any which way you look about it. Make all the fun you want of people going out there and birding. But the truth is, you get some very, almost off limits, let's say, forgotten places that people don't go to.
For sure, yeah. There's only one reason that people go up to that ridge, and that's to look for birds.
I mean, you hiked up there.
You drive an hour and a half up and then hike the remainder of the way. You could hike all the way up, but you'd be starting at about 3 a.m. if you wanted to see anything.
And how far was the hike, for example?
We were hiking most of the day. I mean, we left at 4:30 in the morning. We were up there by 6 and hiking until we left that afternoon at 3 or 4.
Oh, but it's a good day. It's nice. I mean,
full day.
And it didn't rain on you or anything?
No,
just
perfect.
Sweat.
Perfectly so. Lots of sweat.
lots of sweat.
No, it was fantastic. We were lucky enough to see a condor, an Andean condor, at the top of the ridge, which is always special.
Yeah, definitely. So.
Symbol of the country, not many left.
Right. Well, yes, it's true. It's definitely thinning out up there. Now, you've come here to Mompos. We know one another, but you've come here to Mompos, brandishing that bird guide for Colombia, ticking off the species. How has it been here in Mompos?
Fantastic. Yeah, I went out on the Cienega yesterday on the boat. Lots of aquatic birds, beautiful views as well, really, really special place. And on this whole trip I've added, this visit to Mompox has taken my new species list over 100 on this trip.
It's amazing. It really is amazing when you think about it. I mean, I'm not, I just don't know. I just don't know the extent of these things and how people go about it. So, I mean, it's just amazing, really, to think about the expanse and there's an energy involved, of course, as well. But could you see, I mean, we've talked about ProAvis. ProAvis is the sort of organization that you've mentioned now. They have reserves all around the country or just in a couple of isolated places?
No, I don't know the exact number, but they have them dotted all around the country, from all the way down from the Amazon up to La Guajira and those areas. They have some which are broader, protecting a large number of species, and they have some that are designed for just one very vulnerable species, like the curacao, the rarest bird in Colombia. They have a couple in Tirona. No one's seeing them in Tirona. They're very shy, and there's a lot of beach balls and aguilas in Tirona.
So Tirona, I don't know. I think you get a lot of nature lovers out there, but you get sort of, let's say, a more bohemian tourist, perhaps looking to get more back in touch with the roots of the earth and the Kogi experience, maybe.
It's true. Often surprisingly uninterested in actually what the birds are, I find.
So tell us, are there any other sort of, let's say, birding areas of Colombia that you've yet to go to that you would highly recommend that before you leave Colombia, we don't know when you're leaving Colombia, but before you leave Colombia, you will get to?
I need to get properly into the Llanos.
Because so the Llanos Orientales. Out there,
the proper Llanos Orientales. Uh-huh. I've been in that area in Venezuela, the other side of the where the Colombian Llanos run out into the Venezuelan Llanos, and the birding there is fantastic. But being a perfectionist, I have my Colombia list. So even if I've seen that same bird in Venezuela, it has to be seen again within the borders of this country.
I can vouch for the fact he's got his own little notebook, everyone out there. So it's all right. But this is good. You know, diverse interests are making the spice of life. And have you spent a significant amount of time in the Amazon areas, in the jungle regions?
I have. I was there for about 10, 12 days over the course of summer, English summer, 2012. Mm-hmm. Spent a lot of time in Puerto Nariño, which is a really, really lovely little town, and a trip out onto the Amazon, which ended in quite a disastrous turn, in a way, I suppose. It was one of those three-day package Amazon tours. You get them every country you go to in South America. It's the same deal. Fish for piranhas, see the pink dolphins, night boat. And I thought, okay, it's safe. I've done this before. I know what I'm getting. But the thing that made me buy it was the canoe trip on the last day, which was from one river, the Yavari, which is in Brazil, to the Amazon via a little branch between the rivers. And obviously the Amazon goes up and down like crazy, and the river went down by something like 5 meters overnight, and we ended up taking what was supposed to be a pleasurable 3-hour cruise, 9 hours in pitch black with a guide who'd forgotten a torch, and hiking through the river, pulling canoes because you couldn't see anything and you couldn't move, which was...
Hiking in the Amazon.
Are you through the river. Barefoot, yeah. Oh. Because, I was going on a 3-hour jolly canoe ride through the Amazon, so I hadn't really thought to bring anything that I actually needed. That was interesting.
That's less than uncomfortable. We can definitely assert to that. Now, I really want to go down to areas like Putumayo. Putumayo, for some reason, I even spoke about this last year. I still haven't got there. I've been here 8 years. I haven't got there. But then there are different priorities in life, unfortunately. But you're footloose and fancy free, and you could get out there. So I'm going to have to live vicariously through you.
Well, I'm tentatively thinking of going down there in February.
Okay. Well, I might, somehow sign up for that one. But no, none of these canoe trips that are going to take 9 hours and hiking barefoot in the Amazon.
I've avoided canoes since.
Well, this is really all very interesting. How a young man from Shrewsbury, because that's how I know how it's said now, Shrewsbury, so out there, is a Manchester United supporter, and here in Colombia. And I think when we take a short break in a couple of minutes, we will come back and start to ask you some more, let's say, sort of general questions. The questions that I ask of everyone, of course, is how did you get to be here? Why are you doing it? How are you making it work? Because, of course, my listeners, although they're all based all around the world, a lot of them are in this sort of expat, I would say, sort of floating existence where, a lot of them would love to be expats but are travelers or something. There is a difference, to actually making a life in a country and making it work and, let's say, kneading out the bureaucracy or the bureaucratic issues that are so presented. And Colombia is not alone in any of these. If you're thinking about Latin America, there are certainly some adventurous tales that I can share with some of you out there. But no, Tales in Bureaucracy, I think, should be my book about that. But it is interesting to hear about how people... make it happen and make it work out here. So we will come to that, back to that. But before we go into the break, it's quite amusing to know that Chris and I, through the medium of Facebook, know that we have a friend in common. So this is a shout out to Simon Tierney, who was a group leader for Quest Overseas in the Amazon with Chris. And I was actually trained up by Simon Tierney back in 2000 and 4, I think it was, or
that's
5 in Ecuador.
Prospect,
so, it is a terrifying prospect, who is more often than not dressing up, you know, in some sort of outrageous manner to keep spirits high on hikes and so on and so forth. So, it's great to know that we have crazy friends in common, and that's quite comforting. It's comforting at times that the world is so small, and at other times it's quite unnerving.
That's quite good for Simon. Comforting yet slightly unnerving.
He is a good leader. We knew that. I don't know what he's working in now, but we knew he was a good leader back then. And he trained me up in everything that I knew to do, and left me 4 years working in that industry. So then it finally ended up with me here in Colombia. But always very exciting. Anyway, this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McColl, talking to Chris Bell, and an Englishman here in Colombia, here in Mompox at the moment. If you want to get in touch with us and let us know who you'd like to hear, or any people, the types of subjects, please email us at columbiacalling@gmail.com. And of course, you can get in touch with us through our website. That's columbiacallingradio.com. And like everything else, we're on Twitter at Columbia Calling. So there are all the social media things. Oh, of course, sorry, we're on Facebook too, Columbia Calling. So you can find us on that. And you can download the old, the previous Columbia Calling episodes on iTunes. Very easy to find. It's Columbia Calling. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back asking more questions of Chris Bell, an Englishman in Colombia. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McColl, talking to Chris Bell, and I've just found out in the break it's his birthday. So happy birthday, Chris Bell.
Thank you very much.
You are a lot younger than me. That's all I can say. Given that I'm 38, he's a lot younger than me, but very adventurous in spirit and soul and everything else, because he's here in Colombia making a life of it. Now, Chris, you're an active birder. We talked about that in the first section of the show, this section. We talked a little bit about your intrigue and into that side of things. But let us know a little bit about your past. I mean, I know, you know, from my notes here that you studied English literature and Spanish at the University of Manchester. Very
yes.
good university. It's Ben Cumberbatch's alma mater as well.
Absolutely.
So there he goes. A little one for those of you who...
Pictures of him everywhere.
Oh, of course, of course. But probably the most famous alumni right now, at the moment.
I've yet to make my name, so we'll see what happens. But.
And then you did a Master's in Latin American and Caribbean Studies.
Same university.
How did you end up in Colombia?
I ended up... Well, it's kind of in a roundabout way, I suppose. When I was 19, we talked about Simon before the break. I travelled around a lot of the Andean countries, from Ecuador south, Argentina, Brazil, with him. I came to Venezuela during my year out from uni. I was there for a year. That was great. A really very interesting country to live in. Very beautiful, but with a lot of problems at the time. Not the safest place to live, to be honest.
So, but stop, before you move on about Venezuela, where were you based in Venezuela?
In Valencia.
In Valencia. I've heard it's a university town. Quite nice.
That was the university I taught at, the University of Carabobo, which
Carabobo
is always a fun word to say.
Stupid face.
Carabobo, yeah.
But that's the state name, isn't it?
Carabobo is the department.
And what did you teach?
I taught English, just general. I also started a strangely successful theatre club with my Scottish flatmate, and we ended up performing a kind of cut-up version of Monty Python at the International TEFL Convention
in a
different city, with full room and board, and at the end of it, I'm not sure anyone was quite sure what they'd paid for.
Were you laughing more than the guests themselves?
We were the two stars founding members.
Well, yeah. Monty Python's, you know, it's well taken, well received anywhere in the world. Fantastic. And Venezuela, you said it was becoming unsafe when you were working there. And
Yeah, it was. I mean, the inflation there was a big problem. It's strange to see your salary visibly become less valuable before your eyes every month. And there's a lot of problems with street crime there. I mean, it's no secret.
Did you have problems yourself?
I was robbed, a fair few times. Okay. And it's just the complete everydayness of it that makes it strange. The full bus at midday traffic, some guys with knives. It becomes difficult.
So I've had people on here just to talk about Venezuela, and I apologise to Colombia files out there, but Venezuela is our sister country. It's right next door, and everything that goes on there is of a consequence to Colombia.
Absolutely.
I've had Javier Nieto, a security expert on Venezuela, talking about it, and that was pretty eye-opening hearing that one. So you can tune into that one there. But his brother was killed and everything, and basically the current regime and ousted them from the country as well, expelled them. So some pretty hardcore stuff. And we had Mark Kennedy, who was at NTN 24 as well. RCN talking about Venezuela, but he's now at the Bogota Post. So anyway, always interesting to hear about experiences in Venezuela. But now you're in Colombia, so roundabout way, we've talked about the Andes, we've talked about Venezuela. Did you come to Colombia, or was it somewhere else first?
No, it's Colombia. I came to Colombia. I popped into Colombia, actually, for a weekend when I was in Venezuela. Maical, which was a very interesting place. Spent it eating pizza and buying Levi's jeans.
All right, fair enough.
It was a fun weekend. Anyway, I came to Colombia after my first degree, my undergraduate, finished for a year as a British Council language assistant.
Okay.
Which is how I came to be in Venezuela as well. And it's a really great program. They kept it going, actually, that year. They were supposed to cancel it, but good thing for me they did. I loved it here. Went back to England to do my master's, and then, packed up and came pretty much straight back once the results from that were in.
Okay, and so what year were you looking at? Did you come back to live full time in Colombia at this time?
The beginning of this year.
So the beginning of 2014.
Oh, no. Beginning of last year, of course.
2015. Yeah.
The travelling, it's
well, we're only just into 2015.
Monpox hasn't quite caught up yet. I don't think it's still late 2014.
I think we're still in the 19th century. So when the power goes out, it is very much the 19th century. But anyway, that's another story. So very good. You've been here, and how have you? I mean, what have you been doing? Share with our listeners a little bit about how you make an income to survive here in Colombia.
My main job, I'm the editor of See Colombia Travel, which is I think we're the biggest independent English language blog in Colombia. I'd have to run the numbers, but it's great. We were best blog in the Americas last year, which was fantastic. I get to travel, meet a lot of interesting people, and write about Colombia. It's in many ways it's a great job, and I don't have to go on the Transmilenio because I work from home, which I'm sure you can relate to.
I relate to very, very much and very strongly about not having to take public transport in Bogota. So you've been running you've been the editor of the See Colombia Travel blog. We've had them on here. We've had Marcela and Jose Luis, very good guys. And now, and there is something I know about that you know, the last time I spoke to Jose Luis and Marcela, he living in Bogota, they mentioned to me that they would be moving to Medellin. Now, Medellin is a very popular city for expats and people to visit and so on and so forth. What do you feel, provoked, motivated that move? Why from the capital to, let's say, the second city?
Yeah, I think it's harder for me to understand because I'm, like you said, footloose and fancy free with no responsibilities in my life. So I have the time to sort of enjoy the myriad of things that Bogota has to offer culturally and things like that. I have all that free time. For them, they have a daughter, they have family. Marcela has family in Medellin. And I think they were motivated just by the nicer weather, the improved transport, just the general feeling, I suppose, of organization maybe that comes out of Medellin, maybe over Bogota. I'm not sure. I mean, for C Colombia it works well for us because now we're on two different fronts, so to speak. Before that it was when you don't travel you end up writing about Bogota a lot.
Sure.
And it's not the Bogota blog, it's the Colombia blog. So to have people in two cities is great for us, two departments as well.
It makes sense. It makes sense for the expansion of the C Colombia travel blog. But absolutely. Now They are a blog, and I believe they do filming and other things of that nature. So, I mean, have you been involved in any of that, or are you just the editor?
I'm not the face that goes in front of the camera. The man behind the scenes, busy. I've come along on some of the shoots in Bogota to sort of get a feel for it, to help out. My main role is to make sure that people are coming on the website, which is what allows a lot of these videos to be made, is the fact that we have an audience, we have a platform of loyal readers, a lot of people who come on and read what we have to say, which means that you can show that to people and say, hey, look, we have some influence, people read us. So that's my job.
You've done some nice blogs. I mean, blogs up there that I would never write, but equal at the same time that I read, because I like knowing about these sort of offbeat coffee places to go and drink at and stuff, like, you know, things like that I wouldn't find out in truth unless I happened across them just by chance walking through some back streets. And so some nice ones up there. Do you know any of the numbers about the blogs, like which has been the most popular or anything?
We actually just published before the new year the top 10 most popular of the year.
Okay,
which is
so
a regular thing we do.
So it's fresh in my mind.
Actually, the coffee one you were talking about, which was written by Tracy, our intern, that was one of them. That proved incredibly popular. I think it's, my beard's starting to look a bit more hipster. It's wild, man. No, it's a popular topic. Things like that one was very popular. Posts about photo albums are always popular. Those are always very popular posts. We have a really enduringly popular post from earlier this year about where to go for gay people visiting Colombia. Mm-hmm. That one is incredibly popular. There's a lot of people coming to Bogota realizing there's a lot more to Colombia than what maybe they thought, that there are these independent coffee houses, mm-hmm. these interesting bars, bookshops that they can come and visit. Music ones have been brilliantly popular. I write a lot about some of the smaller bands that I like in Bogota and get a childish thrill when they share them, even though they have fewer followers than the blog I write for. I still get a childish kick out of that.
That's part of the joy of it. Or it's like, oh, they followed me back, you know, or they tweeted it, or they favorited it.
It's great fun. It's great fun.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I know that about, let's say, about sort of gay-friendly Bogota. Bogota is a gay-friendly city.
Really is.
You know, when you think about it in terms of Latin American cities, I would say that the other one would be sort of Rio. And then aside from that, you know, they're still coming into their own. I know that there are gay communities in every Latin American city, but sort of, you know, when I'm in Bogota, I live in Chapinero. You live in Chapinero, which is, you know, very, let's say, colorful neighborhood. And indeed, it's very gay friendly, and that's where all the gay bars are and discos and what have you. You know, the communities, whatever communities you have, from goths to punks to those in the gay community and so on, all live side by side. I mean, it's very diverse. It's a
sort of lively, democratic feeling place. Everybody kind of rubs along happily, and you get some really good, you know, bands and artists and things coming out of that, which is nice.
I know a blog that the Sea Columbia Travel published, and I can't remember if it was you or the famous Paul Fowler, a former blogger there, who it was called Dapper Old Gents. Bogota's Dapper Old Gents.
I think that might have actually been Paul Giles.
Oh, Paul Giles. Okay, that sounds about right.
I'm not a hipster, maybe a bit of a hipster.
He was incredibly hipster, Paul Giles.
He wrote some fantastically funny posts about those kind of things.
But the Dapper, there are just hundreds, if not thousands, of Dapper Old Gents in Bogota. I refer to it as Old Bogota.
Old, but yeah.
Because, you know, they're in old, not even tweed suits. I would say something between tweed and lycra. or Italian polyester, you know,
tight with age,
and there's little sort of almost pork pie hats, but not quite.
Yeah,
and little gentlemen who obviously you know dress up to the nines because that's how they would have dressed up in the 1940s.
Yeah. And they can't imagine not going to the shop in a suit.
And they'll sit around in the Parque de los Esmeralderos or in Chapinero Lourdes Park or somewhere else in Dapper Old Gents. I thought that was one of the funniest ones ever.
That's a good one. I still enjoy that one. A lot of good mustaches amongst those guys.
Well, then, you know, Paul Giles had his own moustache, I think, so, didn't he? He had quite a big, like a Merv Hughes.
Yeah, exactly. That should be the name for it, isn't it?
The Merv Hughes moustache, so therefore he must have had some sort of interest and focus on moustaches. And of course you can find some quite interesting facial hair in Bogotá, as I'm sure you can in any other...
it's on the money, though. The money is really influencing the moustache.
This is true. And when Gabo comes, there'll be another moustache.
On the 100 mil. I'm not looking for it. You can barely change a 50.
Can you imagine the 100,000 peso bill with Gabo on it?
Tiene más sencillo.
You know, when I'm on a moto taxi here and it's 1,000 pesos for the ride, I'm just going to have to, you know, set up a tab. And I don't think in 2 months here I would take 100 moto taxis, you know. It's the distances are so short. It's just me being lazy. Anyway, so, I mean, you know, there's a lot to laugh about. I would worry about what that means for prices and inflation, 100,000 peso bill, if we're talking about the serious nature of it. But we are going to get Gabriel García Márquez on it. So.
It's a shame because I'd quite like to keep one of those as soon as it's worth quite a lot of money.
Well, it's
it doesn't really just.
$50, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'd like to frame and have that for my memories, but.
Yeah.
I also want to pay my electricity bill.
So, okay, and talking about that, you've steered it nicely into sort of domestic bliss now. So how, we get a lot of people, I get a lot of people writing to me, and it would be immense help to those who listen to the show who are perhaps thinking of coming to Colombia about how do they find somewhere to live. I mean, I know there are various Facebook groups and whatever, but, you know, a lot of people want to live with Colombians, improve their Spanish and be more immersed in the culture rather than living in an expat sort of bubble in a house in the Candelaria. How did you go about finding your digs?
It's been a couple of times. The first time was genuinely a case of wandering the streets and neighborhoods I liked, looking for those signs in the windows with phones in with a friend of mine. And we eventually found a fantastic 15th floor apartment on the Septima in Chapinero, which had incredible views, but no furniture.
Uh-huh.
You know, furniture can be quite expensive. The second time I used Bogota Short-Term Rentals, the Facebook group, I found a nice place in Chapinero Alto, and when I had to leave there, funnily enough, I just asked the doorman, I don't suppose there's anyone else who's looking to rent in this building. And as it happens, there was three floors up
so
in
you actually
a nicer apartment.
Moved up in the world.
I moved exactly
and
up
did,
in the world.
And did the rent go down or the rent increase?
The rent stayed exactly the same and my number of dogs doubled.
Oh, well, there you go. And everybody loves a dog. So you've got visitation rights with the dogs.
I have, yeah.
Tell me something. Give us a ballpark figure about rent. You know, renting a room in, let's say, Chapinero Alto, which is a desirable part of town. Lie about it. It's a nice part of town to live in.
It's very nice. I got quite lucky with that. I pay 650,000 pesos. Plus, no, there's a couple of bills that aren't included. Some are. The internet was extra. I live with a girl who just moved into the apartment herself and was looking for... The thing that changed it for me was she was looking for a kind of a long-term roommate, someone to be actually part of the apartment. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the problem with those groups is people have a questionable definition of tenant or roommate.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, they want to be part of the apartment. They want to put their stuff up and live there rather than just have their room and be like a lodger.
Yeah.
So, it was an improved thing for me. And the cost is... The cost is not too bad, actually. As it goes, I'm bordering Rosales, where the cost would be...
It would more than double.
More than double that, yeah.
But, I mean, let's say if we're saying 600,000 plus some bills, which are not going to amount for too much.
I work from home. I think that jumps out probably.
Yeah,
a bit, but
possibly.
It's
but,
not too bad.
But equally, $300 a month, it's not... You're not looking at London rents or Paris rents or New York rents or anything like
exactly.
that. So
when people say Bogota's an expensive city, I often think it can be if your tastes are at the upper end of the expense spectrum. But if you're a young person, particularly a student or somebody with fairly regular tastes, Bogota can be as expensive as you make it, I think.
And if you drink out of boxes of aguardiente, it gets a lot cheaper.
It does. And blurrier.
On street corners with the students and the emo
exactly,
crowd,
yeah.
rather than drinking in the top end bars in the Zona Rosa.
You know? Where you could be pretty much anywhere.
Anywhere in the world, except that... Yeah, and the shrieking could be in English too as well, is it? which is what happens. But, so, no, excellent. And good to hear that you did that. So what's it called? The Expat Rentals Group or whatever?
Bogota Short-Term Rentals.
Bogota Short-Term Rentals. That's where you found it. So do check that out on Facebook if you are interested. Of course, I think what you did as well is wandering around is usually the best because you pick where you want to live. You like
exactly.
an area, you pick where you want to live. And so if you want to live in Teusaquillo, you go down to Teusaquillo. Equally, so if you're in Medellin, walk around. And if you can see up as high as the skyrise, high-rise apartments in El Poblado, maybe you can find yourself a room that way.
That's where the binoculars come in.
Yeah, right? There we go. Your bird-watching binoculars. But you might get caught for something else.
It's tough on beaches as well.
Now, this is true. Tough on beaches in Tyrona as the creepy guy with the beard.
It didn't stop me.
The creepy guy with the beard.
I turned up at the nudist beach by accident, actually.
Oh, yeah. We've
took
had
a wrong
that
turn.
Before.
Took a wrong turn out of Pueblito.
But honestly, there's never any attractive people in nudist beach. I've been there.
It's a big beach as well. There's not many people on it at all. Really.
No. It's just, anyway, so it's right at the end of Tyrone.
I think maybe the most beautiful beach I saw in the park. It's really stunning.
It's just because it's a long walk away, it's a nudist beach. I just think that puts off a lot of people going there.
It's a long walk.
It's a long walk. Sweaty.
Yeah.
sweaty genitalia. anyway, so that's not moving about that. As we talk about sweaty genitalia, that dovetails me quite nicely into football. because I do know that you are a Manchester United fan.
I am, of course.
We've had quite big news in recent months of old Radamel Falcao being brought on loan, so Colombia's star striker, unfortunately missed the World Cup, but Colombia's star striker brought over to Manchester United on loan, and they're paying something incredible.
Silly money, really.
It's silly money. I don't even have the figure to hand because
it's going to work out about 16 million just to have him for the season with his wages.
It's a lot of money.
45 to make it permanent?
You know, and I don't know if he's 100% fit yet either.
I think we might unfortunately be catching him towards the end of his top level career, which is a shame because it's sad for me. I'm a big fan of his that it's my club where possibly his career might fall
peter
apart
out.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's a bit sad because, you know, you just felt that the move of James Rodriguez and Radamel Falcao when they left their respective clubs, so Porto and Atletico Madrid, to go to Monaco was motivated by cash and the agents rather than a desire for football. And now I will be shot down by various people I know for saying that, but it was Monaco and, you know, they had that new Russian billionaire owner who then has had the most expensive divorce in history. history and had to sell.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. And you know, it just seems all a little bit strange. And that poor old Falcao got, I guess he could have got injured in any game, but, it, you know, in a cup game against a meagre opposition, I think.
End of the season, yeah, really not going nowhere, nothing in it.
You know,
at all.
A bit disappointing. And of course, then he didn't, you know, it wasn't at the World Cup. And was he missed? I mean, now we could debate that forever. But.
I think they would have missed someone with his cutting edge in front of goal, possibly, in the Brazil game.
Yeah, because they were afforded space in the Brazil game, yeah, up front. So, I mean, I don't know. So far, he scored a couple of goals, right?
Three, I think.
Three goals. And he's assisted quite a bunch. I mean, he's in the right place at the right time. But with a team with Van Persie, with Danny... I know Danny Welbeck's gone
Danny
to
Arsenal. James Wilson is our new young Mancunian kid.
Is he good?
18. Well, I'm told he's good. He's fast.
He's fast. Well, I'm. You know, I used to be fast. I didn't mean that. Just had long, flappy legs. But all right. So you got Falcao. You got Van Persie. Of course, Rooney's dropped back a bit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, that's quite a lot of strike power there.
It is. It's
quite a lot of wages.
It's amazing that we're not winning more games by a bigger margin, to be honest. But I think the thing with Falcao at the moment is that, as much as I love him as a player and having met him, he's a really lovely guy and I wish him all the best. But from $45 million for someone who's going to be 29, whose knees don't look what they used to be, you've got to wonder whether that could go into someone...
There we go.
He heard me, yeah, obviously. Yeah. You've got to wonder whether that could go into someone who has a bit more of a future, a young player with a bit more to go in front of him. It's hard, though, but where are those players?
This is true. I mean, and would, you know, I don't know, $45 million today, would it get you the player that you want to get, or are you still gambling on someone? Because the prices are so out of control anyway. So do you think that he'll only be on loan for this season? It won't be made into a permanent deal?
I mean, it's hard. He scored and assisted and played very well in his last three starts. If he keeps going and gets the goals, there's clearly money to be spent. I mean, we've spent silly money on some players, to be honest. So I don't know. I live in hope. That was my present to my dad for Christmas, was a Man United shirt with Falcao on the back.
Oh, nice.
So it's going to be slightly wasted if he only gets to wear it for one season. So.
But I think, you know, he's got that sort of really gutsy and hard-working ethic sort of thing that you see. You can see it. Even as I'm not a Manchester United fan, but I am a Falcao fan because I want him to do well in my home country. You know, I want him to be understood. And so I'm out there wishing him well and hoping. And so I watch him the games, and you know he's doing all that he can to be in the right place to try and put in the goals or try and, you know, play through his teammates. So he will earn his place in Man U lore just for being so dedicated, you know.
English fans respect nothing if not hard work and dedication. And Tevez was a good example of Man United. Didn't actually score that many goals, but loved.
So that's why I relate that. If you go back to Spain a little bit, sort of Michael Owen's time in Real Madrid, you know, he didn't ever get a full game, I don't think. But when he came on, he always ran his little heart out.
Absolutely.
He's a little man.
The Tim Henman of Real Madrid football.
That's very true. Let's now move on from our sporting prowess to Tim Henman. But anyway, we've got four more minutes. And as we are winding down, I feel that I've started the year without discussing anything political, really, at all, apart from Venezuela. This is episode number 81. Can you imagine? 81 episodes. And so, I mean, we had the ELN announcing a couple of days ago that they would be prepared to, lay down their weapons, and the FARC will continue towards the end of January. There will be the negotiations. How do you, as a foreigner here in Colombia, feel that Colombia is progressing? What do you see for 2015?
I mean, I hope, the way things are going, I see a good prospect for some sort of peace deal being agreed upon. Whether that's going to be an effective one is a completely different question, but I definitely see that. I think it's funny, coming from an outside perspective, a lot of people have this view that how could people not want these deals to happen? But even today, just wandering around Mompos, I stopped and chatted to a few people, and almost without question, there was a lot of people who were quite opposed to the peace deal, to that even happening at all. And it's hard to relate to, because I obviously haven't experienced the loss and the problems a lot of Colombians have experienced over the years. So it's very easy for me to say forgiveness is the way forward and you have to move on, which I do believe, but it's hard to say that to people who've actually suffered directly from this. How do you square that with the idea of the leaders of the FARC coming out with a lot of money that they didn't necessarily earn legally, probably nice jobs and apartments and security contingents, when they've caused so much damage? I don't know. I see... I live in hope with that, because Colombia's a country that I really love, and I love the people here, and it's somewhere that I hope will move on from these problems. I think it's maybe, it's a lot to expect something to happen in the years just since 2012. I mean, if you look at the statistics on peace negotiations in other countries that don't have quite any number of the victims that the Colombian one has. I mean, I think, was it they say now something like, what percentage of the population registers victims? 7 million or something.
Yeah, we've got more, 5 million plus displaced, and the official figure is 220,000 deaths directly related from the armed conflict. That's Human Rights Watch out there, but it's a low number. We know it's higher than that.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way of getting around it.
For sure.
It's a high percentage, and 50 plus years. It's a long time.
A long time. And 3 years is quite a short amount of time to expect all of that damage to be rectified,
I think that's one of the arguments at the moment. I know that Santos is calling for to speed things up, but equally, you know,
fast isn't always better.
These things might have to take time. Yeah. You know, we're quite impatient. But anyway, well, listen, let me take this moment to say thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Where can we see your blog post? Just tell us the website.
You can see it at ccolombia.travel/blog, and that's C with a double E.
So C as in vision.
Not as in yes, Colombia, which we've had problems with before.
ecolombia.travel/blog. Look out for Chris Bell, rising star in the writing world there. Well, I've got to throw something in there as well. But anyway, we listen to that show. We've talked about everything from birding to travel to work to how to rent your apartment here in Bogota, a bit of politics, a bit of football, and a bit of inane banter. That's what it's all about here on Columbia Calling. I hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with more interesting guests. And of course, get in touch, like I asked you before. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com and www.columbiacallingradio.com. If not, you can always abuse us on Twitter at Columbia Calling. I will see it because it's me answering those tweets. Anyway, it's great to have you listening. Thank you, Chris Bell, and we're signing off. Bye-bye.